from Wall Street to the White House. This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We are here to talk money and politics with Liz Peek, Fox News contributor and syndicated columnist, and Steve Moore of FreedomWorks and Committee to Unleash Prosperity, and also the host of More Money on WABC Radio, which follows this show. I don't know why nobody ever puts that in for me to pitch it, but there you are. More Money.
Well, thank you for doing that, finally, Larry.
I know. It's really bad. I know. You think I'd only been doing this 20-some-odd years. So I want to talk about the Kevin McCarthy stuff, but Steve Moore, just before we do that, reading the weekend edition of the Committee to Unleash Prosperity newsletter, Art Laffer's book is coming out. We're going to have celebrations in various cities. Lower tax rates, higher revenues. Let me just read this. When the top tax rate has been cut and held at reduced levels, as in the 1920s, the 1960s, and the long boom of the 1980s and 90s, briefly in the late 2010s, astonishing reversals have occurred. The rich have brought their money out of hiding and put it to work in the economy. The huge swings in the American economy since 1913 have had an inverse relationship to income tax rates. Just talk for a minute about the bald truth of that statement, sometimes referred to as the Laffer curve.
Well, it fits like a glove. That just as Laffer said in that introduction to his book, Larry, that it's virtually every time we have cut income tax rates, good things have happened for the economy. Good things have happened for jobs, and every time we've had big tax increases, it's just the opposite. And one of the points Arthur makes in the book is a point that you make in your book about what was Reagan and the JFK. What was the title of that book again?
JFK and the Reagan Revolution.
Revolution, yeah. He kind of makes a similar point, which is, I had forgotten, you know, I mean, JFK, of course, was a Democrat, and you have a lot of passages in your book about how JFK, you know, basically said, you know, if you cut tax rates, you're going to liberate the economy and get more growth. And I don't understand why it is that Democrats today are so hostile to that message, because it worked for Reagan, it worked for JFK, and it worked for that other president you worked for, Calvin Coolidge, right?
Absolutely. By the way, I'm going to moderate. Amity Slays is doing a Coolidge thing in Washington next month. I'm going to moderate it. But Donald Trump did cut corporate tax rates,
and Trump, yep.
Results were very, very good. One of the things that's interesting, Liz Peek, on the Art Laffer. So, if you tax something less, you get more of it. The incentive effect of keeping more of what you earn or more of what you invest gets people to take a more active position in the economy, to work more, to invest more, to grow more. And that increases incomes, which are taxed at the lower rate, but you get even higher revenues. But Arthur makes a related point, and that is, when you lower marginal tax rates, tax avoidance goes down. Avoidance is one of the biggest losers in the IRS revenue game. And a lot of people forget that, Liz Peek. And I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, I think it is. And there's so much data to back up this premise. I mean, look at state versus state results. One of the great cottage industries in New York right now is getting out of New York tax-wise. Mm. And it's a really sad thing, because it's obviously hurting New York. We all look down the road and we can't imagine New York's finances getting any better. The only solution Democrats will come up with, who control the state, is to raise taxes. So it just puts a premium on getting out now. And as you both probably know, and your listeners probably are aware, it's extremely difficult to leave New York State and city. You have to kind of make all kinds of changes to your life, including changing your doctors, changing your physical residence, et cetera, because they're so viciously greedy. Right. But here's the point you guys are missing, with all due respect. Democrats don't care about the growth of the private economy. They care about the growth of the public economy. They care about the growth of the federal government. And and also state governments and city governments. They think that is a better path to prosperity than the private sector. And that's why they're willing to forego the growth in the private sector and rather want to compound their problems by raising taxes and putting more money and power in the hands of politicians. I'm afraid that's actually true.
No, I think that's true. They've become socialists. They're not Democrats. They were JFK Democrats. There are a lot of conservatives. Wilbur Mills was a key JFK advisor to reducing tax rates in the 1960s. By the way, Norman Turay, who was Reagan's undersecretary of the Treasury and a huge supply sider, worked for Wilbur Mills in the 1960s. Just want to put that in. Those Democrats are gone. They're gone. So you're right. The socialist Democrats. Now, that's a perfect hook into my next thought here, and that the Freedom Caucus has made the commitment to America so much better and made Kevin McCarthy's platform so much better that I really think this is a bullish, positive development. He finally got it last night. It's pro-growth. It's balanced budgets. It's no tax hikes. It's going to open the spigots. It's going to do a lot of good things. It's going to go back to regular order. I mean, you know, the commitment to America, Steve, was kind of fuzzy. Didn't really spell out the kind of stuff we wanted it spelled out. And I think, you know, these guys did a pretty good job. I know it was touch and go. I know there was some personality in there and some, you know, spear throwing like there always is. But basically, I think this is turning out to be a very good story, Steve. What you thinking?
I think it's a big, big victory for the conservative movement. And I think these 20 who stood up and said no against ferocious opposition are heroes. And I don't agree with every one of them, and I don't agree with every demand that they made. But this was a big deal. And it's so interesting to me. Even my friends at the Wall Street Journal editorial board, where I, you know, once worked.
They don't get it. They don't get it.
They even, you know, call them the chaos, chaos caucus and so on. And, you know, I just wrote a piece on this, Larry, just before I came on the show, making the point that, you know, if it takes a little chaos to get some of these things done, I'm all for it. And it was the media. It was President Biden. It was the Republican establishment. It was the lobbyists in Washington. It was the swamp that was against everything these guys were trying to do. And so I applaud them. I think that we should have a victory celebration for what they were able to accomplish. And I want more of it.
Look, they were disruptors.
Right.
And it wasn't always pretty. These things never are, but they were disruptors. And, you know, I don't know what all these specifics are going to be, but the generic rule changes here.
Right.
Liz Peek, the generic rule changes here. The whole thing can be summarized in a return to regular order, not only for budgets, which is vital by itself, but for tax policy, for energy policy, for judiciary, oversight policy. This is a triumph of the committee structure, which is an open, transparent process holding hearings with witnesses and so forth. And that is a big change from the centralized, you know, approaches that have given you 4,000 page omnibus bills. This is a good thing.
Yes. And with all due respect, can I just say, I have been out there for a week saying this was a good thing and that there were some problems with the way the House has been managed. And I was like the lone voice. In fact, I think everyone was mad at me for supporting these guys. I mean, really? Guess what? I mean, the way the House has been run under Nancy Pelosi is like a dictatorship. It is completely wrong. There hasn't been open debate on the floor. There's not been an amendment from open debate on the floor since 2016. She left yesterday or last night saying something about you seeing the shrinking of the gavel. Well, you know what? That's a good thing. Why should the Speaker of the House have total say? But to the policy points, yes, what they're talking about is stuff we should all be applauding. And in fact, I went through their demands in a piece on Tuesday saying almost every American would agree that dropping a 4,000-page bill full of pork is completely anathema to the way our country should be run. But let's move to the bigger picture. The bigger picture is we actually do need to take some tough positions on federal spending and Medicare and Social Security. The kicking the can down the road is irresponsible, and that is what our legislators have been doing for a decade. So we had this huge increase in federal spending because of COVID. Okay, that's over now. The Democrats don't know it's over. They don't want it to be over. But now is the time to assert a really different point of view and a different discipline. And I'm cheered that someone had the guts to say this. Honestly, I was shocked all week. And I just read the Wall Street Journal thing, and it's a very corporate kind of position, it seems to me, honestly. I'm not impressed with that. I think we need a little bit of feisty disruption. Guess what? They're referring to like 2011 when we put caps on spending, and that's what these guys are aiming to do.
Yeah, right.
I say go for it.
Yep, caps on spending, pay-go. They call it cut-go. I had Scott Perry on, the head of the Freedom Caucus, called it cut-go. I like that. I think, Steve, one of the rule changes will be a 3/5 supermajority for any tax hikes. I like that. I know they're aiming for a balanced budget. I mean, I've talked for months about the need to put in the principle of a pro-growth balanced budget. I mean, Newt Gingrich talked about this. And it's funny, I would have Kevin McCarthy on, who I like very much, and I supported him. And Kevin would talk about it, but it wasn't in the commitment, and they never really talked about it. And you got to talk about it. In order to get these spending cuts, you got to talk about it. Your piece on the PAYGO, remember you said you would have cut $130 billion out of the omnibus. That's right. So all this stuff's going to make a comeback. And the Rules Committee, the Rules Committee is going to be expanded to have these conservatives, so that's good. I mean, I think McCarthy, they're helping McCarthy, not hurting him, and they're going to help the economy.
Well put. And I said, when you were talking, I was thinking about a famous story when Tom Coburn, the great fiscal conservative in the Senate, first met with President George W. Bush. And the first thing he said to him was, "Mr. President, I'm going to help you spend less money." And that's what we need so I kind of agree with your core point there that actually McCarthy in some ways is a winner here too. I mean, it was a brutal week for him, no question about it. And maybe that's not such a bad thing. He can be kind of an arrogant guy, and maybe knocking him down around a little bit wasn't a bad thing. But actually this in some ways gives him more power if he really wants to do the things that he said he wanted to do in the commitment, because this creates a kind of roadmap and rules changes that do exactly that.
The dirty little secret was that the commitment to America was a wussy document.
Right.
It just was. We wanted it to be good, and we talked it up. But when you actually read it, Liz, there was no teeth in it at all. And what these conservatives have done is put teeth in it.
And by the way, there's a reason Republicans didn't do well in the midterm elections. And we took the House, but we barely took the House. And part of there are a whole bunch of things you can talk about. But one reason is voters really didn't think the Republicans made a strong case. They didn't really know what Republicans stood for. And part of it was the failings, of that commitment to America. The reality is, and one of the reasons there was such opposition to McCarthy is there's no evidence that he really does want a balanced budget. There's no, I mean, he's been all over the place. Back in 2009-10, when he was the young gun, he really believed in, fiscal sobriety and all this kind of stuff, but he's kind of gotten squishy. And let me tell you something. It's not just the three of us who've noticed that. Voters have noticed that. And there are a lot of people out there on Twitter and emailing me saying, hey, we don't really think that Republicans are committed to this. And what we see is just incredibly growing debt. No one really stepping in front of it. McConnell, I mean, honestly, the anger about the omnibus bill and the fact that they didn't go for a continuing resolution. I mean, now we have a 2-year Republican House, which basically had zero input on an entire year's spending. That is so wrong. And really, I got to tell you, Republican voters across the country are furious about this. So all the drama, all of that that took place, you know what? I think it was very healthy because a lot of people wanted to see someone stand up and say no more.
I think I'm going to bring my eight-month-old puppy into this discussion, whose name is Grace 2, that the conservatives are going to keep Kevin McCarthy, pardon the phrase, on a short leash. Okay, just the way I have to with Lil Grace, I got to keep her on a very short leash sometimes. They're going to keep my short leash, and that is not a bad thing. In fact, it's a good thing. And they've sharpened all this. Now, we'll see. Steve Moore, I haven't looked, or either of you, I haven't looked. Congressman French Hill was on at the top of the show, said that the rule changes are posted on the Republican House website. I haven't seen it. When I get back home, I guess I'll look for it. So we don't know all that's going to be in there. But I think it's a really positive thing. I think yesterday was the Kevin McCarthy rally, or was the, conservative Republican rally, 700 points. I don't think it had anything to do with jobs. I know nobody agrees with that. Nobody understands that.
I'll take it.
Supply side thinking. Let's take a quick break. Let's muse a little bit on what kind of policies they can go for, starting with a pro-growth, pro-prosperity balanced budget. We're talking to Liz Peek of Fox News and syndicated columnist Steve Moore of FreedomWorks and Committee to Unleash Prosperity, and Steve's show, More Money. He hosts that show. It follows this show directly. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. We're here with Liz Peek, and we're here with Steve Moore. It's interesting, on the Fox News website, they were talking about the best line in Kevin McCarthy's speech last night, "Our nation is worth fighting for." It's a great line. Republicans went wild over that. Democrats sat quietly sucking their thumbs, which is so typical. I want them to put together a balanced budget. Now, Liz's point is correct. Because of the omnibus and the CR didn't get done, they have to deal with 2024. They can't cover the last 9 months of 2023. But a pro-growth balanced budget, make the Trump tax cuts permanent, slash spending, particularly domestic spending, particularly discretionary spending, open the spigots for oil and gas. And I think, kids, now you have to tell me, French Hill mentioned this, the Holman rule, which can defund specific agencies based on policy issues. You know, so that, for example, the IRS and that travesty of the agency. Now, I don't know enough about the Holman rule, but maybe one of you do. But that's in other words, a balanced budget, you may not get it because obviously it's subject to economic vagaries and so forth and so on. But it's a good way to look at the world where we haven't looked at the world that way before, but it has to be pro-growth. It's not a root canal balanced budget. So what do you guys think about that?
So can I say one thing? I think when they were making their demands, and I'm not sure how it ended up, it wasn't that you had to have a balanced budget for next year or 2 years from now. It was that if you're going to raise the debt ceiling, which has to be done, I think, around July, that they have to have a plan, a fiscal plan 10 years out in which eventually the budget is balanced. And again, everybody's hair caught on fire. I think that's pretty reasonable idea. I mean, isn't there, it has happened after all in modern times that we achieved a balanced budget. It's pretty fair to argue that with a $5 trillion jump in federal debt because of COVID, we have to take a little bit of an austerity program going forward, which you get to your point, Larry, not via simply austerity and cutting spending, but also engineering some revival of growth. And that, it seems to me, is a pretty darn reasonable expectation.
I mean, Steve, we've designed this in the past.
All right. Yeah.
Russ Vogt, by the way, has redone it. Trump's last budget actually did it, by the way. That, of course, was ignored because of the 2020 COVID stuff and so forth. But the point is, you got to make allowances here. You got to have dynamic scoring. You got to keep the Trump tax cuts permanent, particularly the corporate tax cuts. I didn't think the personal side was that great, but the corporate side is what you want to maintain. And then Arthur's always talking about, you know, building back towards a low rate, flat tax idea. So you have a lot of ideas, but the basic idea is we're going to retrench on spending and we're going to keep supply side policies alive. So it's a balanced budget, not a CBO balanced budget or, you know, a root canal. It's a pro-growth, pro-prosperity balanced budget. And what the hell's wrong with that?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And there's an historical precedent for this. It happened in 1995
yes.
when Newt Gingrich first became speaker. And I was there. I was working for Dick Armey at the time. Mm-hmm. He was the majority leader. And Newt came in to everyone's sort of surprise. He went in front of the Republican caucus and said, we're going to do a seven-year balanced budget plan. And my God, people were fainting and, we can't possibly do that. And they did, but they did have the seven-year plan. And it's an amazing story, actually, because not only did they cut spending, but they also cut taxes.
Yeah.
And you got growth and lower spending, and we balanced the budget for four straight years.
All right.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
More money following this program, and Liz Peek, ever present everywhere. I'm Kudlow. We will see you next weekend.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.